welcome to episode 40, the Big 4-0. It's a celebratory episode. As always, joined from Cheltenham by Mr. Kieran Masterton. How are you, Kieran?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Not too bad. I've jettisoned the Madonna mic this week.
So have you?
The audio fidelity will be resumed.
I think it was rubbish. I think it's fair to say, last week.
What, the mic or the show?
Well, arguably both. The mic particularly, I was thinking.
Yes, I agree. Yes. But the Yeti's back out. It's had a dusting, a cleanse.
Nice.
And I have the old arm back on the desk.
In a better state than mine, hopefully.
What, your arm or your desk or both?
My Yeti.
Well, the Yeti's gone. It's no more.
It fell to pieces.
Yeah. I don't know what you did with that. I blame your dog.
Well, he wasn't involved in the... It was probably just abuse on my part.
What were you doing to it?
Well, nothing. Just using it to talk to you. But it all fell to pieces. Anyway,
enough about microphone.
Enough mic talk. We're 40.
40. Big 4-0. Can you believe it? It's only taken us 3 years.
At least.
I think it's 3 years. 3 years to get to episode 40.
Wow.
It's... like all good musicians, they need a break, right? You can't.
Yeah, it's true.
We're not Sean Wes. We can't put out 15 episodes a week.
No, it's not sustainable.
It's not. I mean, the man's a machine. I don't know how he does it.
No.
But, anyone send you a cake? Any cake come in? No?
Nothing. Nobody cares.
No. If you were to pick a cake to celebrate, what would you go for?
Lemon drizzle.
Really? Homemade, naturally?
Obviously, yeah.
By your own fair hand?
Yeah, a bit crusty on top, you know.
That's you all over.
Yeah, it is actually, yeah.
But you do make a mean lemon drizzle. And quiche, actually.
I make a good quiche. My wife makes a good lemon drizzle.
Oh, is it the wife who makes it? It's very good. I mean, it hasn't had an airing for a while, but...
It hasn't, no.
It doesn't travel well, apparently. Hence... Yeah, but I'd go for the... Waitrose caterpillar cake. Do you know the one?
Another one, yeah.
It's got everything. It's got like crispy chocolate, dark milk, white, Smarties.
Well, there's jelly things on it, hasn't it?
No, they're Smarties.
Are they?
And then you've got like...
You seem to be intimately acquainted with this cake.
Well, whenever I have to buy one for, you know, Charles' birthday, it's always one I get.
Right.
And you always have to go for the end because the end's always covered in the chocolate.
Nice.
Yeah, and the feet.
Stealing chocolate from children.
Someone has to.
Yes, indeed. But, keep them healthy.
So how are we going to celebrate this 40th episode? We're just going to chat about some stuff, I guess.
Yeah, as per.
As per, we had some positive feedback, didn't we? We did.
Well,
I think we had some shock.
The fact that we bothered to make an episode.
I know, but. And can you believe His Royal Highness Craig Wales also honoured the competition?
He is a gent.
He is a true gent.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's big into making knives now. Did you know that?
Is he?
He's pivoted.
Is that like spoon whittling or different?
Well, I think it's sharper.
I presume hotter.
Yeah, I mean, he's...
I was just wondering if it was akin to spoon whittling or if there's a career change.
Oh, so are we using spoon whittling as a euphemism for getting away from digital, or do you actually mean spoon whittling?
No, I mean as a euphemism for getting away from digital.
Yeah, no, I think this is actually knife making.
Yeah, no,
I think he's even got some famous TV chefs using his blades.
Really?
Yeah.
We have to have him on to talk about it.
I think we should.
Yeah.
As pivots go, this is a good one.
It is. It's big.
I'll tell you what's fascinating me at the moment, though. I've got to be honest with you.
What's that?
Tattoo Fixers. Have you been watching it?
Well, I am familiar with the show, yeah.
Don't lie. You told me you're an avid viewer.
And your obsession.
Well, I mean, it's just staggering. Well, there's a few things that spring to mind. The receptionist, Paisley, for anyone who's not watched it, what does she do?
She doesn't do anything. She also doesn't have any tattoos.
She doesn't have any tattoos. Well, visible ones, let's be honest.
In an episode, she discusses her fear of getting a tattoo, and they put one dot on her index finger.
Wow.
Yeah.
So she does have a tattoo, but it's like a full stop.
It's a full stop on her index finger, yeah.
I just love her approach to reception work, though. It's just kind of like, all right, sit down.
Yeah. And then shouts out the back.
And says, oh, we got someone in. And then she goes,
we should be clear. This isn't great listening for people who don't know what Taddy Fixes is.
So, yeah, if you're not familiar with the show, it's a British show on, is it Channel 4?
Channel 5, I think. It's pure class.
Where basically three of the country's leading tattoo artists have set up shop in Hipster Central, aka Shoreditch, I think, or Hackney, in London, and they are fixing people's dodgy tattoos.
Yeah.
And there are some clangers.
And they call them cover-ups in the trade.
Cover-ups in the trade. And what gets me, though, is someone will have, like, I don't know, a 2x2-inch tattoo of, I mean, I don't want to go into some of them, obviously. It's a family show.
Is it?
Well, 40 episodes, I've never sworn, unlike your good self, Kieran.
Right, anyway.
Yeah, you know the rules. And they'll cover it up with, like, you know, an 8x8 skull with flowers.
Yeah.
It's pretty incredible. The best one I did see was this woman went on holiday and she decided she wanted to get a tattoo and she couldn't quite work out what it was going to be. And she was on the plane and she was looking at the safety card, you know, where they've got those kind of little cartoon things about, like, if the slide comes down, how you do it.
Yeah.
And so that's what she got done. She got a picture of a plane door open with the slide and this little character sliding down on her ankle. It was just like,
oh my God.
I mean, that was one of the tamest ones. Some of the ones aren't fit for audio.
Back to front show. No,
but yeah, it's taking up a lot of time. I mean, it's keeping me away from learning Node and things like that.
Is it on catch up?
Oh yes, yeah. You can watch back. You can binge.
Right.
You can binge. Yeah, I read somewhere the other day that Netflix are employing people to binge watch to give feedback on the shows. £1,400, £1,400 a week.
Jeez.
I mean, would that be a good job? I don't know. If it's all that ghosts and ghouls, I couldn't do it. If it was like crime drama, maybe.
That ghosts and ghouls. What does that mean?
That's what the missus is into. Always the ghosts and the ghouls. You know, the game of, what's it called?
Game of Thrones.
Game of Drones, that's it.
Game of Drones, right.
All the rage, that Jon Snow.
Anyway, moving swiftly on from tattoo fixers.
Oh, I've got another topic for you.
Have you?
Yeah, this is probably applicable to you now you've got a co-working space.
Oh, God. What is it?
Standing desks. Discuss.
Right. I've never used one.
Why not?
Well, I just don't see the appeal. I'm sure that, you know, the fitter, more agile developers amongst us.
Now, when you say agile,
I mean physically.
Physically, yes.
Would probably tell me that it's good for my core strength.
I think you've got good core strength, Kay. Good core strength. I've always said that about you.
Cheers, mate. Yeah. But I think I just quite like sitting on a chair.
Well, when you've dropped, £4,000 on an Aeron, it seems silly to waste it.
That's true, exactly. But
I did see that you can get a mobile kind of card-based standing desk implement that you can kind of put in your hold-all, in your Herschel, and take it with you to your co-working space and then kind of build it out on top of a desk. And then at the end of the day, you can just kind of take it away with you. It's about £50.
To be honest with you, in the office I work in, I would feel a little bit silly standing up.
Why? Is there a lot of short people? Or?
Well, no, just not nobody stands up, so you'd be the only person standing up in the corner, wouldn't you?
Whatever.
Well, people stand up and go make a cup of tea and stuff, but people don't stand all day every day.
So what's the ambience like?
It's pretty good.
Yeah,
it's pretty relaxed.
No Lego heads.
No Lego heads. No, nothing like that.
Any kind of motivational posters?
There's no motivational posters. No.
Really?
No, nothing like that. No, it's all very tasteful.
So you mean there's no, like, keep calm and code on or anything like that?
No, nothing like that. No, thank God.
Really? Have you networked with your fellow co-workers yet?
Well, in as far as I've introduced myself, and we've had conversations about what we do.
Give me the elevator pitch. What do you say? Hi, I'm Kieran. I'm an independent something.
Independent barista, coder, something or other. Yeah.
You've got that down.
Yeah. It's good, isn't it?
It's not flowery.
Polished.
You need to flower it up a bit.
Yeah. To be honest with you, I'm as we've said before on this show, I'm completely incapable of introducing myself and what I do anymore because it's sort of... too broad to pigeonhole.
Yeah, too much talent. Is that what you're saying?
Effectively, yeah.
Too much talent to package in a neat elevator pitch.
Yeah. I might go back to the word ninja.
Oh, I always saw you more as a rock star.
Oh, fair enough.
It's the caps.
Yeah.
Yeah, big selection of caps. Anyway.
And the inability to cut my hair.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought you were a regular, you know, £5 down the barber's person.
No, you know that I'm not.
Have you found a new barber's in Cheltenham yet?
Well, the closest, yeah.
What's that then?
It's just a barber's.
A barber's?
I couldn't even tell you the name. It's Shocker. Just on Bath Road, opposite a coffee shop that I go to. So, you know, it's close. It's cheap.
Cheap,
get
good.
It done.
Get it done, in and out, put the cap back on. See you in 8 weeks. Love it.
Put the cap back on before you leave the place.
Yeah.
Just to give that confidence boost.
Yeah, I really like your work, but...
I'm putting the cap back on.
I don't want anyone to see it. Yeah. Yeah. Is it one of those barbers... Oh, no, just one more thing. Is it one of those barbers where they've got those kind of like pictures of black and white men with great sort of haircuts?
It does, actually, yeah.
Always blow dried. It's like, would you imagine
going in? I think
it's
like a Turkish place. I think the guys are Turkish.
Oh, I was about to say, did you have a shave? But of course, no, because you've got a beard.
No, it wouldn't be, would I?
Where do you go? It's like those pub signs. Is there a place you can go like and buy? Are you drinking? You got your cappuccino on the go as well?
Yeah, obviously.
Shocker. You can go and buy those pictures of people with hairstyles. I mean, can you imagine going there? It'd be great, wouldn't it? There'd be like pub signs, hairdresser implements, black and white photos from the 60s of people with fancy hair, always men, blow-dried.
Why don't they update them?
I don't know. You think they'd auto-update now with all this technology, wouldn't you?
You would, wouldn't you?
Or maybe someone could come round. You know, like you see people doing the... well, they don't even do that anymore, do they? All the big posters on the motorway, see them occasionally changing them. Could be a job there. If this code thing doesn't work out, you could just go around and update all the hairdressers with current, you know, you could do a Justin
current
Bieber.
Current styles.
Akira Masterton, you know, and just slot them in, take them out.
The cap.
They need an app for that. That's what they need. You need an API. You
that's,
so that you could,
that's your next startup, isn't it?
So you could push new hairstyles Headings. To these...
.io.
Probably Neil's got that. So you could push these new pictures to like digital photo things. Oh, that'd be great. I think we should register that. It's got to be done. Yeah, I think so.
Anyways. Go for it.
Enough of the startup talk. What's on the agenda this week, Mr. Masterton?
We're talking about freelance and your ability or inability to get work.
I know. So this came to the fore.
In the current web climate.
This bubbled up. It did. Thanks to Sarah Parmenter's post titled "The Elephant in the Room," which did the rounds on the Twitter sphere.
Certainly did. Hacker News took her site down for a little while.
Oh, did they? That's rude, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really? Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know. Probably needs a caching plugin. That would have sorted it, surely. What do I know?
Surely.
And our friend and yours, Vitaly from Smashing Magazine, followed up as well. So why don't you just, if you've not read it out there, people out there, if you've not read this post, we will include the link in the show notes, but, why don't you give us the gist of what Sarah was saying?
Oh, I thought you were going to say, why don't you just take a moment to read it?
We've done that.
So essentially what Sarah's saying is that it is now much harder than it used to be to make a living as a freelancer. Sorry.
So I was drinking my tea and agreeing with you. Go on.
Oh, okay. And that's essentially it. The web industry has changed, and that there is a feeling that digital has gone in-house.
Yeah, this is something I think that we have been talking about and experienced a lot. And I would say going back many years.
I think without wishing to be too, you know, carbon dating about it, I think we first talked about this in about 2011, 2012.
Yeah.
So I remember I was doing a lot of client work at the time, and I think you were probably doing client work as well, actually.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's very, very difficult now. Well, I think it's worth caveating that I haven't really done freelance per se for many years now. Yep. And I guess part of that was to do with not being able to make ends meet with freelance. You know, I think even when I wasn't working at Shopify, I had a few things on the boil, and they were all contributing to the pot, as it were, whether it be the stuff I was doing with Elliot at the time, or some work we were collaborating on, which was kind of client work, but it was kind of not necessarily like customer focused. We were working for an agency or what have you. Or, little bits of editing and things like that. All of them sort of piled into the pot to hopefully make an okay living. And some years it did and some years it didn't. But I remember speaking a lot of the time with you as you were deep into 88. And it was like, well, how do you grow? How do you move away from having one or two clients to having lots of clients? And I think even then it was apparent that this notion of freelancing, or, you know, the two of you under the banner of an agency or a company, whatever you want to say, was getting really, really difficult. And finding the work, doing the work, you know, and then sort of going through that whole cycle was just getting super difficult, because the market was kind of saturated, wasn't it? Everyone.
Yeah, I think at that point, I think it'd be fair to say, sort of 2010, 2011, 2012 type era, I think it'd be fair to say that there was a lot of small agencies, maybe, you know, two people up to about six people, maybe a little bit more, surviving on pretty good paychecks from bigger organizations that just hadn't brought digital in-house yet.
Yeah.
Or had done, and it had been a disaster because they hadn't had the right management for those people, or some combination of that. So basically, I think there were a lot of people out there who had a big contract with one or two or three big companies and were getting paid quite well from that. And those little agencies have slowly been eroded as companies have got more savvy. I think also, I can't remember whether it was Sarah or Vitaly in the article, made a good point about, we used to be unusual in our knowledge and understanding of the web.
Yeah.
And we're not anymore. People coming into the workplace get the web and get how it fits into business and how to use digital effectively, maybe a bit more than they used to. So that consulting piece that we used to do has disappeared, and people are maybe more able to say to an internal department, build me this, or this is what I want, or this is how we want this to work, etc. So I think there's a few different things at play, but mainly that companies have become more comfortable taking digital in-house.
I think you're right. I think there's been a huge shift towards ownership of digital. I think when I first started way back in 2000 or whenever it was, working with web tech, when I was working with the National Health Service in the UK, we were kind of like outsiders. It was like, what are you doing? Why would people need websites? Yeah, we get the need for email, but websites and intranets, and as they were called, and all these kind of things. Yeah. It was still kind of, in a sense, otherworldly. You know, it wasn't part of the everyday. And I remember going to a sort of conference of people who were doing similar work at the time. I think this may have been about 2001, and I remember someone saying, oh, does anyone have any ideas how to update the telephone directory without having to go in and edit the actual individual files for all the staff, because I have 2,000 of them. And I was like, well we use an Access database, and it's just like, and I think you because we'd sort of gone down that rabbit warren of learning, was probably only really scratching the surface back then of what was possible. You kind of got a reputation, I think, for knowing about this web thing, and a lot of people then sort of moved outside of sort of their training grounds, in my case the NHS, and then perhaps went to freelance and started helping smaller companies and so on and so forth, or working, joining agencies and specializing, who were then selling those services back. But I think over time, I've certainly seen it from talking to people, bigger organizations, and the NHS is a great point, I think they've taken a lot of that back, and I think they realized not only were they spending a fortune, but they weren't actually owning the intellectual property in a sense. You know, they weren't actually
yeah.
in control of that. And so it became cheaper and more, I don't know if secure is the right word, there was more ownership by bringing it back in-house, and they could manage it better. They weren't at the kind of mercy of a third party who yeah. had other demands on their time. And I think now digital isn't an add-on. You know, it has to be part of any business, whether they be, you know, healthcare or, you know, people, commerce or, I don't know, consultancy firms. Everyone has digital as part of their everyday, whether it be email, their website, you know, their social strategy, their you know, video. All these things play into how a company is represented. And so you want to be able to kind of own that. You want to be able, in control of that, and you want to be able to react to it quickly. And so I think there has been a shift to people going in-house and owning that, even if they're smaller teams. And at the same time, I think something that struck me when reading Sarah's post was how there was a sort of golden era in a sense of freelancing, you know, this thing about working on lots of different projects, diving in, helping people. And then slowly over the years, people started to move, these kind of headline grabbing freelancers started to move into companies. You know, a lot of them, the people that I know that were consistently writing about the joys of freelancing and how challenging it was and how good it was, started to get acquired, if you will, by tech companies. You know, Gowalla's, Foursquare's, Facebook, Twitter, et cetera, Instagram. Mm-hmm. And so suddenly these kind of standard bearers of freelancing who were doing great work and kind of paving the way for others to follow went into the tech world, went into the startup world. And I think a lot of people, oh, okay, you know, that's interesting. I thought, you know, freelance was the way. And I still think a lot of people think that freelance is the way. But I just think it's increasingly difficult. I mean, we know a lot of talented people out there who you'll often see tweet, you know, oh, something's fallen through. I haven't, you know, I've got next month free. Anyone got any interesting projects I can help with? You know, it's really hard. And I think I don't see it getting any easier. What do you think?
Well, I think that there's always been different tiers of freelancing, and I don't mean, and that doesn't mean in any way that I think that, you know, the people you were just describing, the you know, for want of a word, the freelance celebs or the web celebs, as people used to call them, I don't think there's anything you know, necessarily better about the position they were in. They just had higher profile clients, and they just talked about what they did more, so therefore they got more attention. But I think there are different sort of, you know, and I've always said this whenever, you know, I've been having conversations inside, you know, small businesses that I've worked with, or even, you know, large companies I've consulted with, it's very easy to look at the web community in inverted commas and say, this is the norm, this is what's happening with technology, this is what's happening with best practice and everything. But then there's also this enormous group of people who are either just small freelancers plugging away on WordPress sites, and they have their little way of working, and they're in a bubble. And then there's also this huge corporate community of web people who are doing things within the confines of a big corporation and have rules and systems, you know, surrounding them, and maybe can't just break out and use the latest JavaScript technique or whatever they might want to do because they've got restrictions. So I think that it's important to recognize that maybe the people that we look at and go, oh, they were the cream of the crop, have now gone into companies. I mean, there are still a lot of jobbing freelancers out there. I just think that a lot of the high profile ones have maybe gone elsewhere. But to answer your question, I do think it's a lot harder to earn a living as a freelancer than it used to be. Just through the very fact that we've just discussed that a lot of companies have taken things in-house and therefore don't need your expertise as much as they used to. I think it's also particularly true from the, you know, again, I don't want to be disparaging, but the bottom end of the freelance market, where maybe you're producing smaller websites for small companies, and you're charging a lot less, and it's a much simpler job. It's maybe using a WordPress theme and adapting it, for example. That kind of work, I think, is being eroded by really good self-serve systems like Squarespace or Shopify, for another example. But, you know, so I think that part of the market's being eroded by SaaS products.
Yeah.
And I think that the top end of the market's being eroded by people who are bringing tech in-house. I think Paul Boag's talked about this a lot, about bigger corporations drawing teams into, drawing expertise into the company. But that kind of brings me on to the problem of wages, because we were talking before we started recording about wages and how these companies building these teams can't necessarily, and I think Vitaly actually touches upon this in his email that he sent out about it. The bigger these companies can't afford to pay for quote unquote rock star developers, or not all of them can afford to do that. And I think that what we're seeing is, you know, combined with a lot more people having these skills, which is obviously making, you know, which is diluting the market. I think that we're seeing salaries drop overall. That's just my impression looking at job listings and stuff. I mean, I've had a few friends who are looking for jobs recently, and they have been saying to me that they're quite surprised that maybe the job they're in or the contracting job that they're in pays them a lot more than what seems to be on the market right now. Mm. And maybe, you know, just as an example, you know, my friend who lives in Bath was sending me links to jobs that he was looking at, and he was saying, you know, we were being paid this in 2008 as middleweight developers, and this is for a senior role. So it should in fact be the opposite. You know, the price of everything's gone up, so the wages should have gone up. But I think that we're also experiencing jobs being, you know, having salaries that are lower than they used to be for the same skills.
I think that's interesting, though, and I'd love to talk about this sort of the rise of the platform. Obviously, I have a mild vested interest, but I can explain how some some people are. I can share some tactics that people I've spoken to are using to kind of make that profitable. But just going back, I think there's a few things there, aren't there? I mean, when you say diluted the market, I think there are training platforms out there that sort of say you can learn development in 6 months, and you know, you'll take a few courses and suddenly you're a developer, and people are going out and they're saying they're developers, which it's not for me to say whether they are or they aren't. But you know, more and more people are taking up code. There's a big push in schools. There's a big push generally around code and coding.
People are just a lot more aware of it as well.
Yeah.
You know?
So
I think, you know, people, when I was growing up, people obviously, because the web didn't exist, aspire to be a web developer. Whereas I think now, you know, people are in school saying, you know, I want to work in the web.
Yeah. And so maybe that bottom tranche of people bubbling up, you know, it's supply and demand. There's so much supply that maybe that has forced down the market rate. But still amazes me when you look at these recruitment sort of postings about what people actually want. And I don't know whether it's a case of trying to weed out you know, the tire kickers, but it's like there's no way you can have like Ruby on Rails, Python, Node, you know, and design skills and front end, and know how to set up Nginx, Varnish, and God knows what else, you know?
Absolutely. I think it's completely unrealistic.
And they want to.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, you know, you look at the job rate and it's like £22,000. And you're like, wow.
And actually, you see, this sort of brings me on to another pet hay, which is the putting how many years' experience you got of something on a job advert. And I think I've seen quite high profile agencies even recently putting, you know, a minimum of 3 years, a minimum of 8 years experience in blah. That's a frustration as well, because, you know, I don't necessarily think that proves anything. I could say that I've been working with Ruby on Rails since 2010 or 2009, maybe. But that doesn't make me necessarily a more proficient developer at using Ruby on Rails than Somebody who picked it up 18 months ago but is a hardcore engineer and has dived straight into it and, you know, understands it backwards.
Exactly. And what does it actually mean? Does it mean like in paid employment? So you've been doing X in a paid yes, job? Or
quite.
You know,
or
maybe,
did you first touch Ruby on Rails 5 years ago? You know, yeah.
There are people, we know people out there who can just pick up a technology and they'll know more about it in 6 months than we could ever hope to know of. They just get it. They just get the way these things work.
I'd say 6 hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know developers and ops people who can pick up a technology, you know, read a couple of README files and know more about it than I knew when I've been working with it for, you know, a year.
Yeah.
It's just the type of person, that innate, you know, understanding.
So, I mean, in answer to
and
sort
appetite,
of...
appetite, I should add, appetite for knowledge yes. in that area.
Yeah, they just kind of soak it up. I mean, we could reel off a list of, you know, 5 or 10 people we both know who, like, you know, if I have a tech problem and you can't yeah. answer it, I'll go to straight away.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, yeah. Mr. Roberts, thinking in particular. So I think, what does this mean for the future of people freelancing? Do you think if you're aspiring to freelance, you're aspiring to start, quote unquote, an agency, or, you know, there's a few of you who are maybe feeling disgruntled in your current position. You've got the desire to start something of your own. I mean,
I think these are all very different questions in a way, because, you know, I think freelancing is not the same as running an agency, and running an agency is not the same as maybe 3 or 4 of you doing a startup. I think the future of freelancing is that you are probably going to have to be extremely proficient in a very niche area, and also quite high profile in order to make what I would consider a decent living from being freelance. And I think we need to be clear that when I say freelance, I don't just mean, you know, coding for a living or designing for a living. I mean, you know, consulting, strategy, whatever else goes into it. I think you're going to have to be probably at quite a high level to be able to go out and then not drop money, as it were.
Yeah, I mean, I think, as I said earlier, one of the things that I have noticed people doing particularly well, and in relation to Shopify, which obviously is a company I work at, is people who they're specializing in Shopify as a platform. And the money is, obviously it's in that, you know, you can build out a theme and you can do all the design and so on and so forth. But the real kind of longevity and the relationship that not necessarily these companies bring in-house. So let's say you're a bricks and mortar store who wants to, quote unquote, go online. They're never going to bring in a big division at the beginning, you know, at the beginning to do that, because it's just too much. It's a toe in the water. Often these companies often have budgets, but they're not in the game to run a big sort of digital division of their company. So
no,
they'll work with agencies who may specialize in Shopify, so they can get that store and they can get the payments up and running. But the real kind of revenue comes from all the advice and kind of strategy that they can also provide. It's that kind of added value on and above the tech side. So,
yeah.
And you build that up through the more merchants that you work with, the more you can see the bigger picture, you know, that kind of like, well, who's your market? How do we drive traffic? And what are other people in your space doing on social? And that's probably not why you got into that business, right? That's probably not why you wanted to code for a living. But I think that's where the potential bigger bucks are these days, where you can actually go in and you can help someone. You're not just delivering a website, you're delivering an enhancement to their business. And I think, you know, if you're not interested in that, that's obviously fine. You can, maybe it's better to work as a freelancer to a few agencies or be the person behind the client, as it were. But I think there are people who are understanding the technology, they understand how quickly it is that you can get these things up and running. And then the actual revenue, the real big bucks, comes from this long, you know, this relationship that you build over time. And you do A/B testing, you do trials, you do, you know, you enhance their email communication strategy, you build out templates. And so you're using all those skills, but you're using them in a very defined area, and you're measuring it and you're helping that business grow. And I think there are some people in the Shopify ecosystem who are doing amazing work. And they started off as web devs or web designers, but they've found a passion in the kind of sphere around that, which is helping these businesses grow. And they're measuring it. They can justify their rate. They can then go to the next client and say, look, I helped this business go from zero sales to, you know, 200K in 6 months. It's very, very difficult to do that when you're doing an information-based website. So, well, we did this beautiful design and it works across all these platforms and we had, you know, 200,000 people look at it. It's a lot easier to go to, and to do that for you, we want this. It's a lot easier to say, well, we took this business by doing X, Y, and Z from this to this. And so I think the people who, as Gary Vee might say, are crushing it, to me, in my world, are the ones who are actually offering those services on and above the actual core offering, which in, you know, in our background would be web design.
I wouldn't say that this is unique to Shopify, but I think it is a it is something quite specific to Shopify in some ways as well, because of the nature of the client base. I mean, you might disagree, but I think that, you know, certainly the people that I'm, you know, I'm working with Clonic Coffee right now who are using Shopify, and I completely agree with you. You know, we've brought in, you know, I'm not a Shopify expert, but we've brought in people who are, who are helping us enormously in changing, you know, changing the way that we're looking at loads of different things. And obviously providing exactly the sort of service that you're describing. But I do think it is slightly unique to the Shopify model, or at least the Shopify customer base, because they are in that middle ground that I was discussing, where they maybe have a little bit of a budget because they have a they have an existing business and they want to get real and do e-commerce properly, or commerce properly now, because we're not calling it e-commerce, are we?
No, we're not.
So I think, you know, and there could obviously be a point, I suspect, where these companies go, they go, you know what, we're going to take this digital team in-house because we've grown to a certain size where, you know, we can have two or three digital people in, and we can take the knowledge we've gained from you and give it to them, and they can, you know, they can do this for us.
Yeah.
Because it's more cost effective, but we'll keep you on as a consultant or whatever, and consult you when we need you. So I think that there's, but the nice thing about that is that there are lots of companies in within the Shopify ecosystem that are at that stage. But I'm not necessarily certain that you could say the same thing for WordPress, for example, or for I mean, Squarespace is slightly different, but or Jekyll or whatever, you know, whatever the latest you know CMS is that people are using. You know, he says showing his ignorance, craft, whatever. You know, I think that I think it's harder to say it for those things, partly because they're not set up in the same way as Shopify are, but partly because the type of companies they attract.
I think they're different.
I think, you know, the nature of a Shopify store is that people have an ongoing requirement for input.
That's my
take on it. Whereas I think a lot of people build a WordPress site, ship it, and never touch it again.
Yeah, until it breaks.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Until you get a white screen of death.
Oh, I love those. I think you're right. I think it's scary though, specialization, and as our friends across the pond call it, niching down. it's hard to turn away work, right? It's hard to turn away when people are knocking at your door and it's maybe not the work you want, but you. We've all done that, you know. This is not what I'm trying to become known for. This is not what I want to specialize in. But someone's offering me £1,500 to turn around this PSD in 2 days. That's £1,500. That's a chunk of change.
Yeah.
So you can get stuck in this rut of doing work that you don't particularly want to do. And I think you see that a lot. You know, you talk to people and they're saying, "Yeah, it's going all right, but you know, I'm doing this work. It's not really what I want to do, but it's hard to turn down." And I don't know the answer to that. I think. From people I've spoken to.
It's often that those works repeat work as well. So, you know, if you've got a client who's giving you these boring jobs that turn around this PSD in 5 days or whatever, and we'll give you 1,500 quid, you think, oh, well, it's easy money, and they keep coming back to me. And that's the hard bit to break. The hard bit to break is not necessarily the one-off £1,500. It's the £1,500 a month from that particular client.
Right, yeah.
You know, when they keep coming back to you, you think to yourself, well, actually, this is my steady income, and if I turn them down once, they're going to go elsewhere.
Mm.
That's yeah. the fear, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I would love to end this particular section on a positive note. I mean, what do you think the future holds? What do you think people can do if they are in the freelancing, or what do you think? I mean, is it about broadening your offering or becoming more specialist, or what do you think?
For me, I think it's becoming more specialist. I think right. it's about, and it's about attempting to offer more value than maybe an internal team can offer based on your breadth of experience.
Mm.
Which is kind of saying become a specialist, but become broad at the same time, which is what I really mean is, I guess, your depth of experience in that particular field. So whether that's, you know, growing an e-commerce business or whatever, you know, based on the needs of the company, possibly it's not going to be, they're not going to attract someone into a job for 35K a year or whatever, to work for them internally that has the level of experience they require. So they will bring people in at the beginning of a project or now and again, you know, on an ongoing basis to consult. And that's where, you know, if you want to be a freelancer, I think that's where you want to be. I think, you know, someone like Harry Roberts, I know we always quote Harry.
We love Harry on this show.
Yeah. This sort of, you know, the pinnacle of success or whatever, but
he's very tall.
That's, yeah, he is. But that's not fair. I think it's more about what he's done is he's been very clear about his expertise and what services within that he can offer. Yeah. And, you know, to be fair to most people, I don't think that it's as easy as all that for most people. You know, Harry had a very, very specific knowledge base from day one, but he obviously grew that very intentionally. But it's not necessarily that easy when you're a general jobbing PHP, Ruby, CSS, bit of JavaScript type developer to know how to then turn that into, to funnel that into something you're going to get paid a decent amount of money for. Yeah. I think another thing is I would quite, you know, I was talking to Elliot J. Stocks about this a little bit recently. I question, like, you know, we were talking about our in. Liking being quote unquote independent or freelance or whatever you want to call it. And I think, you know, you've got to question why you want that and what the benefits of a job are over freelance. There's a lot of downsides to freelance, but in terms of lifestyle, there's a lot of upsides. You know, maybe you're sacrificing, you know, the benefits that come with a job just because the grass seems greener on the freelance side of the fence because we get to sit at home or get to sit in coffee shops. But the realities of that aren't always so rosy. So I think, you know, I'd also question whether, you know, freelance is actually as desirable as you think it is. Because there is a lot of, you know, worry involved with it. There is a lot of overhead in terms of, you know, managing a business, managing the invoices, credit control. I was talking to people in the space I'm working in now about credit control and the amount of time they spend chasing clients and the average amount of time the clients are late paying an invoice. You know, these things are all things that, you know, eat into your time and are not things that you set out to do, you know, to want to achieve in being a freelance web developer or web designer, are they?
No.
So, you know, I think you have to really know that the freelance quote unquote lifestyle is what you're after. Because, you know, it's very easy, especially a few years ago, to look at these rock star freelancers and be like, well, that's what I want. You know, I want to be a digital nomad. I want to work from wherever I please. I want to get paid big bucks to be, you know, a big freelance name. But if you talk to those quote unquote rock stars, they're having the same worries about cash flow and the same worries about invoicing and everything that we all are.
Mm. Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think
so. That wasn't necessarily the positive answer that you were looking for, but I think, you know, you really do have to question whether it's the right thing. Is there actually a market for what I do, and can I reach those customers?
Yeah, I agree with all that. I think just going back to our you know our premier example of people who positioned well and know exactly what they're offering, and that is Harry. I think I remember speaking to him about this last year when we bumped into each other at a conference. I was like, I'm really impressed by the way that you know, from the day that you left Sky, you've positioned yourself as you know, a CSS architect, someone who goes in to help, who's not available for like CSS work. You're there to do a specific job. And I think on the whole, it's really worked out for him. You know, it's opened up a route to speaking, and the speaking has fueled the consultancy, and he's got a really good cycle going there. And as far as when we last spoke, he doesn't go in and sit and write swathes of CSS every day, which I think is...
It's worth pointing out as well that, you know, the term CSS architect wasn't something I'd heard of before I saw it on Harry's site.
No, I think he
created that role for himself.
Exactly. So, I think positioning is really hard. Something that we've always struggled with. You know, we've talked about flowery bios in the past, but I think, those articles are really interesting. If you haven't read them, I definitely encourage you to go and read them and, you know, have your own take. This is ours. We think it's something that's been around for a while, and we've seen the change sort of happen gradually over the years. But there's plenty of good stuff out there. You know, there's plenty of good opportunities. It's just about working out how you're different, what value you offer. And if you want to stay in the freelance independent agency world, then find your customers. You know, how to specialize, work out why you're different and better.
There's lots of different ways of specializing as well. You don't have to specialize just in by saying I'm a JavaScript engineer, you know, or whatever. I think, you know, you don't have to say it's about the skills, because we've often had this conversation, and I guess, you know, saying stuff like, you know, a carpenter wouldn't say I'm a chisel expert.
No.
You know, we've always, you know, I think we've always questioned slightly the, obviously it depends who you're marketing yourself to. Harry's clearly marketing himself to technical teams who want to bring him in to help them with CSS. To explain himself as an expert in a specific tool or a specific technology is perfectly acceptable. But I think if you're advertising yourself to a business consumer type person who's going to employ you to build a website, to talk about all your technical skills is not beneficial particularly. So you could say, I'm, you know, an expert in e-commerce, for example, or I'm an expert in film, in my case. You know, I'm not saying like take it too granular, but it's sort of, you know, I think we sometimes look at the wrong thing in our industry. We look at the tools that we use and we say, you know, I'm a grunt master or, you know, I'm totally 100% proficient in SFTP or whatever the example might be. You know, I look back at old CVs from, you know, God, 15 years ago, and, you know, I felt like I was pitching myself completely wrong because all I was doing was listing all my skills and you know, how many years I'd been doing it and an example of where I'd used it and that kind of stuff. And really, I think these days that wouldn't wash. It would be it's a lot broader, you know, you need, especially in the freelance market.
Yeah, CVs, that's another topic, but yeah, so yeah, I think hopefully if you're listening to that, you got some ideas, or, you know, we'd love to hear any of your thoughts on freelancing. If you're listening to this, tell us what we'd be doing wrong if we ventured back into that world, or, you know, what's
working. Or what you feel you're doing right as well. Like, if you feel you're making a decent living from freelancing, you know, how are you doing it? I think it is interesting
Really interested to know kind of the split. Is it all dev work? Is it design? Is it consulting? Is it, you know, working for other agencies with Overflow, things like that?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's an interesting topic. I'm sure it's going to run and run and run. Obviously, the world will be full of freelancers and they'll be full of agencies. So obviously, it does work. But I think we both agree that it's getting harder out there to find the work, you know, get bigger work, employ people, then you need bigger work and so on. It's an interesting cycle.
The key thing is the drop in in the level of pay for doing that as well. Mm. That seems to be, you know, I know developers doing the work they were doing 3 or 4 years ago for a lower day rate now.
Yeah, day rates are a funny one anyway, but that's a whole other story.
We've had that, yeah.
But yeah, do let us know. You can catch us. We've lit the fire back under our Twitter account. I think we've tweeted twice in the last week. So
amazing.
We're good. We take this seriously. Yeah,
we do.
You know the 40 episodes. I mean, that's like a career. I mean,
it is.
You can only listen to this podcast if you've had 3 years podcast listening experience. Well, who knows? But any dog tech? No, we haven't got dog tech this week.
There's no dog tech.
We do. I did. I forget where I came across this, but it is probably one of the funniest satire sites I have seen in some time. And I thought we should share. It is, it's quite fun. It's the passabledesigner.com. Did you check it out?
I did check it out. Yeah, it's kind of like the Onion.
Onion for our industry.
For our industry, yeah. Yeah, it's
I'll read out some of the
it's very cutting as well.
And very very close. Take
any prisoners.
No, so the opening post on this blog is dedicated design student tutors cloud.typography subscription over visiting dying grandma.
Yeah, there's also San Francisco-based designer celebrates after making it a whole month at new job.
Followers left heartbroken after designer eventually abandoned side project.
Yes, it's worth a
disappointing glance, designer so. Deletes tweet of Apple purchase after receiving just single favorite. it's very good, but it's where is it? Let me see.
Eagle-eyed kerning confirmed by design student to be the worst thing in the world.
Eagle-eyed designer plots valiant takedown of colleague's work. Yes. Discussion on meeting title stretches right on into lunchtime. It is very funny. It's actually by where is it? A guy called Zander Braid, who's clearly got his finger on the pulse of the zeitgeist. He builds it as a site covering the most important riveting news in the design industry. I couldn't agree more.
This is probably a topic for another time, but it's interesting to me the amount of sort of whistleblowing type articles I'm seeing on Medium about people, about companies in the tech industry. It seems to be accelerating recently. Maybe that's something for next week.
I think so. Why not? I think the importance and sort of position of Medium these days is quite interesting a conversation as well.
Yeah.
But we shall leave that for episode 41.
We will.
I'm now going to go and enjoy a cuppa and a piece of I'm going to enjoy a piece of cake. Well, I'm not really, but it would be nice.
You know, should take
the day off to celebrate and go for a cleanse or something. But no, work beckons. Yeah, you know, but we did 30 months on our retreat.
Oh yes, yeah,
juiced,
yeah.
Cleansed. You've forgotten already.
Yeah, it's all a blur.
It is a blur, a kale blur. But we shall be back at some point, probably next week. Who knows?
Yeah.
And you can find us, of course, on the twits, as you call it, at Back to Front Show. We have a website too.
Surely not.
BackToFrontShow.com. Are we on anything else? Oh, a bit of Facebook. I think we're on there as well.
Are we?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, we're on Zuckerberg's little app there as well. It's
little
all good.
Thing. We're not side project.
Should we? We should do Snapchat. No, is that the one where is that where you send pictures and they disintegrate? Is that one?
They disintegrate. Your phone disintegrates. That's the one.
I mean, so okay.
Ask your kids.
No, not yet. They don't know that yet.
Do they not?
No.
Not all over the Snapchatters.
The what?
Snapchatters.
No, certainly not.
That's what the West Country kids call it, surely.
I don't know. Do they? I try not to speak to them.
Well, you live there.
Well, true. Yeah. True. Yeah, I just, yeah. Snapchatterers. So, oh, by the way, did you know that we're technically we live in, what's it called? Silicon Gorge. Yeah, It's the tech-based community of the Southwest is known as Silicon Gorge.
Oh, God. I'm glad I moved out.
You're perpetuating the myth, mate, with the Lego-headed co-working space.
There's no Lego heads anywhere near my co-working space. Seriously, are people actually calling it this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, okay.
Yeah, it's the tech hub of the Southwest, Silicon Gorge.
Silicon Gorge, okay.
After the famous Cheddar Gorge. Home of the cheese. Is it like champagne where you can only be cheddar if you're from Cheddar?
No, I think that's one of their big complaints, isn't it? Their big issues with the word cheddar is that any old American plastic can be called cheddar as well as their lovely crumbly goodness.
Is there like a lobbying group, a sort of cheese?
I don't know. I'm not that intimately acquainted with the cheddar lobbying situation, but
you do surprise me.
This podcast is taking a turn for the strange.
We should next week our favorite cheeses
to cheddar.
Well, you know, the love of a good pivot. But anyways, we shall bid farewell. Thank you as always for listening. If you made it this far,
yes,
we will more cheese related talk next week probably.
Indeed.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Cheers.